What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Mongols Podcast. I'm Mike. With me is Kev and Josh. Coming up on today's show, we'll recap the Hounds' 1-0 loss to Cincy. We'll welcome Ryan Allen to talk OptiStats, and we'll preview what to expect from our upcoming game against the Battery. Let's go!
Can you believe that, guys?
No, I mean, that is the craziest sequence of events we've seen in quite a period of time.
In the top right corner, gentlemen. Out to the middle, back to
So I was really bummed that I wasn't able to make it to this game in person. I can't remember if I said it on the last show or not. It was my wife and I's wedding anniversary, and last year we went to the Hounds. I think it was the Hounds' home opener, and it was on our wedding anniversary, and it rained the whole time. My wife, she likes soccer, but she doesn't like it enough to like sit through, you know, a downpour and like watch a game. So I felt like we had to do something legit this year. Little shout out to A519. Chocolates over in Millvale. Amanda there, we did a truffle making class. She apprenticed with like the top chocolatier, like that's like an actual thing in the country in Napa, and she came back and was teaching us like all about all these different chocolates, and we got to taste stuff, and then we made truffle. It was amazing. So
wow, if you're looking like for the most married thing possible you could ever do, it's like it's like not like a wine tour, nothing like that. It's like, no, let's go to a chocolate tier and learn how to make truffles.
It was insane. So if you're looking for something to do, they're starting to do like corporate events too. Nice. But like the stuff, it comes out looking almost like toys. It didn't look real, incredible. And it was so good. And yeah, Amanda over there, A519, look it up. A-5-1-9. Really, really good. Josh, you were there.
Yes.
And I heard that you got to meet the man, Boston.
Talked to Boston for a little bit. That was fun. It was cool to have traveling support to come watch the game. It makes the game a little bit more lively as far as being a fan, especially in the supporters section, being able to look over and see their supporters and kind of having like dueling chants going on, and just, you know, you see them get hyped, so you want to get more hyped so that way they don't outdo you. Like, it was just fun. It was a lot of fun to do that. They came over and visited for a little bit near the end of the tailgate before going in. Yeah, it was a good time.
Everybody behaved themselves?
For the most part, yeah. I mean, yeah.
It looked like from the video feed that there was a decent amount of Cincy fans there. It looked like they had a good turnout.
Yeah, I don't know what the count ended up being, but yeah, they had a pretty good turnout. I'm proud to say that I'm pretty sure, especially rewatching the game, that you could hear us and not them. I'm just saying.
You could absolutely.
Maybe they should have upped their game a little bit and been a little bit louder, because yeah, I did not even hear them once during the broadcast.
Yeah.
I think Trey Mitchell backed you up on that as well after the game. I think he said the same thing. Although I'd be surprised if he didn't say that.
To be fair, we're also right behind him.
Yeah.
We're a little bit closer in proximity as far as that goes.
Yeah. So I wasn't able to watch this game live because I was making chocolate. So I tried to avoid looking at the score. I didn't want to know what the score was. I wanted to go into this game blind and watch the game. Unfortunately, that's not easy to do. Like, if you go to the USL site and you try to just click on watch, it says, hey, 1-0, Hounds lost. It's like, okay, well, crap. So going into that, I got up early this morning and watched the game, and I had a lot of preconceived notions when I saw that the Hounds lost 1-0. Especially when, you know, I looked at some of the stats, which we're going to have Ryan on a little bit later to talk about stats. I glanced through some of the stats and it looked like we were being dominated in a number of stats, and I got really discouraged. Like, here we go again.
It's hard to watch a match when you know, one, that your team lost, and also that you looking at the stats, you see them dominated. Like, I try to go into every match that's pre-recorded with no knowledge. I'll even get Liz, my wife, in. I'm like, hey, can you turn the game on? Like, I'll be in a different room. Can you get it set up? And then I'll come in, because I don't want to accidentally see the score. I've done that multiple times.
But I'll say this. Seeing that we were sort of dominated in certain stats and seeing that we lost 1-0, after sitting down and watching the game, I came away much more impressed than I thought I would be. And I don't know if you guys had that same sort of experience. Well, Kev?
I mean, my guess, the reason why the stats are probably so depressing is because we got on at 10 men. I mean, if it's 11-11 for the entire match, I'm positive that the stats wouldn't show the way they did. So, I mean, it's kind of a, if there was a way to kind of like, I don't know, bring down the, only look at the stats up to what, like, minute 42 or something like that when the red card happened, I think that'd probably be a fair assessment on it. But
You can do that.
Stats might
but
be
that total. that's not the default setting. Well, let's do this. Let's just go. I don't want to say ignore the stats, but let's go on the eye test. Josh, you were there in person. What was your impression of how the Hounds played? Did you feel good, bad, indifferent? I shouldn't say indifferent, but like,
yeah, I mean, meh. Especially that first half. That first half before the red card for the boss, Abuzumunde.
Yeah,
did I say that right? Abuzumunde.
I think so.
I did better than the announcers because they butcher that guy's name constantly. So anyway, watching the first half, I felt like we were the better team. I felt like we had the front foot, and I was excited. I was pumped. I was thinking we were going to get this. But then that red card happened, and after that, I felt like we really had to just scramble to keep the ball out of the net constantly. And obviously we didn't because they scored, but yeah, that first half, we were the better team. That second half, I thought we did a pretty decent job in defending. I was expecting it to be a bloodbath because of, you know, the 3-3 draw against New York. I was like, oh boy, we're down a man. Now it's going to be like goals, goals, goals against us. But no, for not having Adelaide and being able to keep that ball out of the net for as much as we did, I was impressed.
Kev, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, the red card kind of shapes the entire game. I think leading up to it, I actually thought it was a fairly even match. I didn't think we played as well as we did against Red Bulls. But simultaneously, I still think we put in a pretty good shift. I think, I don't know. I started thinking about, I mean, the announcers kept talking about our previous records against Cincy. And I wonder if there's a mental thing that starts to build up where if you know you're coming up against a team that A, you've never beaten, B, you've never even put a goal past. I don't care if it's different players, different managers, whatever. I mean, I don't know. I have to think that that may kind of creep into your mind a bit. But, I mean, yeah, put this, there's nothing the Hounds should be ashamed about. I mean, as a fan, I don't feel ashamed to kind of follow this team. And to be honest, I prefer the Hounds style of play a lot more than what I saw out of Cincy. I mean, it was really kind of, they have a target man up front. Let's get the ball wide. And they have quality out in wide areas, and their crosses were really well. I mean, and I don't want to big up their I forget the guy's name already.
GB.
Since he's GB. Yeah.
GB.
I'm sure he's a good player, but I mean, you put Herzog or Banjo or even Kerr with that kind of quality of crosses. I mean, they're pinning them right on his chest. I mean, I was really impressed with Cincy's wide players. Yeah, I think if we play that game 10 times, 11v11, we probably come out with 3 or 4 wins, and I'm pretty happy with that.
I was going to say, I was not overly impressed with Jibby. The few times that he had the ball at his feet, he didn't seem to really make great decisions. He was going backwards a lot with the ball. He got the goal off the header, which... the Nightingale put up a post on Sunday where he said, you know, he thought that that was a savable goal. I tend to give Trey the benefit of the doubt there. Anytime you're sort of coming across, the ball's headed off the ground, like you really can't adjust for where the ball could end up. And so he was sort of getting there. I thought all in all, I thought that Trey had a good game. He made a couple of key saves. I thought the defense fared really well, especially considering, you know, we went from a 4-man back line down to a 3-man back line, essentially. Yeah. And two of our players who are known for really just providing width and getting up the field had to stay at home. Like we literally just had to change our entire game plan, which tends to happen whenever you get a red card. But, you know, no longer was it Kerr and Herzog up top doing their thing, and we didn't have guys flying up the sides. And so the whole team had to adjust. And I think with all of that in mind, I don't want to say I was almost more impressed in this game than I was in the last game, but I felt that we still had a chance even towards the end of the game where we could have tied this up. I think that since he was feeling nervy, we didn't have a lot of legit chances. Like there were a lot of nervy shots on our part, long shots that were going over the bar, but I felt like at no point did Cincy feel like they had this thing locked up.
I just want to make really 3 quick fire comments, and if you guys want to ignore them all or go off on one tangent on one of them, I'm happy to. But just Mike, as you were talking, they popped in my head. I feel like I have to say, it's not 2 yellows. I think the refs were, I kind of hate talking about the refs, But once again, I thought they were pretty inconsistent, and since he kind of capitalized on the fact of they know the dark arts of the game pretty well. I want to give credit to Trey because for the first, really for the first half, I was sitting there watching it and thinking, I am going to lean into him on this one because I thought he actually had a pretty poor first half. He came out for something. He came out erratically for a couple crosses that he never connected with, and he just didn't look set and comfortable. But in the second half, I thought he made some incredible saves. I thought his distribution was pretty well, with his hands kicking, not so much. But I think he has a pretty high ceiling. The third point, I forget now, and I'm pretty disappointed.
I want to go off of your comment about Trey. I agree with you that he wasn't the greatest during that first half. And even in the second half, I wasn't that confident with his clearances. It seemed like every time he tried to clear the ball, it would not even get to half, you know, the halfway mark. And it would just be a little bit nervy as far as that goes. But I did think he had some great saves. You know, minus obviously the goal. He went for the balls, and he seemed like to be in good positions for most of the time. And as far as the yellows go, I mean, this is a what do we have the first game? 5 yellows or something like that? We had a crap ton of yellows the first game. In this game, we had 3 yellows.
Yeah.
Again, could be the refs. You're right.
You know my opinion on
this. Yeah, yeah. I agree. And I don't know. It's just, this is going to be a big factor for our games, these yellow cards. I mean, we're going to keep on getting these, stacking up these yellows. We're going to be in trouble. Not to mention the fact that we didn't have Okai and Adelai available because they weren't healthy. We're going to start having issues where we're not going to have players because they're, you know, too many yellow cards.
So I guess one last thing on keepers. Last week it was Broome. This week it's Mitchell. What do you think we do next week? Is it a revolving? We talked about this a lot last season, where it was like a revolving door of keepers, and every week it was somebody new. Do you see that happening, or would you prefer we pick just one? And who is the one that you think we pick, Kev?
I think Trey has a higher ceiling. Like I said, I think there's his best is probably. I mean, look, I've watched 2 games of theirs. I mean, I've seen a bit more of Broome because of last season. But my guess is Trey's best might be a bit better than Broome's best, but I still have a feeling Broome might just be a bit more consistent. So, yeah, I mean, it's a tough one. I thought Broome didn't have that bad of a game against Red Bulls. I thought he was a bit more comfortable, a bit more consistent. But I thought Trey was a bit more, I don't want to say flashy, that's not the right term, but he pulled out some bigger saves. So if it was me, I'd kind of stick with Trey for now and see how that goes, knowing that I have a very solid option in Broome behind him.
Josh?
Very similar. I do think Trey should be the number one. A little bit different than Kevin is, I didn't think Broome had a good game last game. I think, you know, anytime you let in 3 goals, and one of them especially I felt like was very savable. So... personally, I think it should be a no-brainer. It should be Trey. Granted, though, I don't see what they see during, you know, practices and how they perform and their work rate and that kind of stuff. So it's easy to, you know, make a comment about this just by watching the games but not be able to see the practices. But, yeah, Trey should, I feel like, be the number one. I don't want to see the revolving door. I want them to make a decision and stick with it until, you know, it bites in the ass. So,
you know, I mentioned that I thought that the Hounds looked good even when they were down to 10 men and it made Cincy a bit nervy. Do you think that was more about the Hounds evolving into this team that is something that should be feared in the East? Or do you think that that's overhyped expectations for a team like Cincy? Josh?
I mean, we haven't had a win yet, so it's hard to really make that comment. I feel like we're just on this verge, like we're on the precipice of actually being a team that others should be worried about, legitimately be worried about, but we're not there yet. I don't see it. And if we don't start getting wins, then it's going to be another season like last season, even though we did have a lot of promise going into it.
Kev?
Yeah, I mean, I actually don't think we like played well after the red card. I mean, we played as well as you could expect. I mean, I thought we defended with passion. I thought we defended pretty well. I never really felt like we were going to score. And I mean, it's kind of to be expected. I mean, the other point I remember now relates to what we're talking about now is I was actually a little surprised that it took so long for Coach Brandt to make the banjo sub when he did. It didn't. I mean, Kerr was never going to have any kind of joy playing up as a lone striker when we're not even trying to kind of build through the middle and hit Kerr in the channels. We're just kind of launching long balls for him and hoping that he can hold the ball up. So the fact that we bring in Banjo on 60 didn't make a ton of sense to me. But
it's one of those things where I'm still waiting to sort of see, and again, it's two games in, see what Banjo can do, because there was a lot of promise after the preseason. I thought that it was the right call to bring him in the way that they did, because if you're going to drop both Kerr and Herzog into the midfield, you need some way to get them into the attack more. And just having his job almost was not to score. His job was to get the ball and just wait for Herzog and Kerr to get into the play. And there was one or two times where the three of them sort of linked up and it was looking really nice. But again, when you're down to 10 men, those opportunities are going to be few and far between. Your job is to basically keep the ball out of the net and just take the one or two chances you have. So, yeah, we'll see what comes of K-Banjo.
Quick question for you. Do you think there's anything to be said about the fact that we only used two subs this match? We didn't use that third sub. At first, I was a little bit concerned about that. But, I mean, if you look at what we had on the bench, I'm not sure I know what he should have done, if there should have been a third sub or not.
Yeah, that was one thing I did not look at and see was who was on the bench. Again, the Nightingale mentioned in his write-up that it was a shallow bench and there wasn't a lot of talent to bring in. Yeah, I mean, coming into this end of the season, Coach Brandt talked about having depth at every position. So I don't know if it's...
I mean, I think he's unlucky with... I mean, Okai goes out injured. Adelaide goes out injured. I mean, so even if you're able to make the switch and bring Adelaide in so that you don't have to move Balshan in the center back, and the team starts to look a little bit more settled. And I think maybe he might have just been a bit unlucky, especially when he had both of them at his disposal last week. It's not like this is like, you know, it's not like they've been out for a couple of weeks and you're planning for this. You know, he kind of had to midweek do the best with what he had. Yeah, I mean, if it's a shallow bench, I'm not entirely. I as well didn't know the substitutes, but I'm not entirely surprised. Maybe then he didn't make the third sub, but simultaneously, I mean, in our last interview with Coach Brandt, he even mentioned how the one thing he might still be worried is their 90-minute match fitness. And I saw that against Red Bulls too. I thought legs kind of fell off a bit once we got around 60, 70. But at the same time, it's kind of understandable. I mean, this team, as I mentioned last week, is kind of playing at 100 miles per hour. I mean, they're, especially when you look at players like Hollingsworth that are just busting a gut to get around the pitch. And that's kind of what's demanded for every player. I think going forward, I would want and hope and expect to see, you know, all three subs used and not just on the 85th minute or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess the one other thing of note in this game that a lot of people were talking about was the Cincy pass back to the keeper, which ended up with an indirect free kick for the Hounds on the 6-yard box. Essentially, Cincy just took everybody and lined them up on the goal line, and Kerr tapped it to Herzog, who had a bit of a run up. That was probably our clearest cut chance. Josh, you were there at that end. How nervy was it for you guys watching that?
So I don't have very much experience watching indirect free kicks. Like, I don't really can't remember the last time I've even seen one live or even in a game I watch on TV. So I didn't know what to expect from it because it doesn't come up often. I seriously doubt they practice it before the game. You know, that doesn't seem like something you would, you know, have too big of a game.
Coach Brandt mentioned in the post-match that, like, yeah, they haven't practiced it.
Yeah.
And he said, like, maybe that's my fault, but blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, they said they haven't practiced.
Not surprised at all. Not surprised. And,
yeah.
You know, so not knowing much about it, watching them set up for it, I kind of had the feeling like this is going to be tough, just because how are you supposed to score when, you know, every single one of their players is inside the net, essentially blocking it. So I was at most hoping for a deflection just to go off it, you know, for Herzog to rip it in there and just hope for a little bit of a pinball effect. And it just hit the back of the net somehow. And it didn't. So but it was nice, though, to see that they were able to clean up as far as it bounces off the players, and then we got possession back like two times, I believe. So even though it was indirect and it was missed, we still got like two more chances to try to get across in there and then a corner after that.
Yeah. Coach's actual comment post-game was, "I think we gave away a super opportunity to score first on the indirect. Corey was too far away from the ball, and to be totally honest, we don't practice indirect kicks from the six. That may be on me because it's going to happen once every year and a half or something, I suppose, and you need to be ready." So
not very convincing it's on me thing. Like, yeah. I guess it's on me.
I will say one thing that I've really appreciated about Coach Brandt after each of these games. He's critical. He's not afraid to call players out, but he's also very critical of himself. Like, it's always a, like, this guy could have done better, but it's also kind of on me, which I think is good. Like, taking that responsibility and that accountability, I think, is just going to force everybody to try to up their game so that they're not getting called out, including himself. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that I've been really happy with. But yeah, it's a weird thing to try to get ready for, and I think if the players could go back and do it over again, they would. But it's just, yeah.
I mean, looking at the situation as it was happening, I'm thinking there's less than a 50% chance this is going in. I mean, it's as close as it is. I mean, there's just so much things that aren't going for you. The best way you can do is try to lift it up, which Corey obviously did. Or maybe try to hope that one of them jumps and just kind of fire it along the ground and hopefully it goes underneath them. But there's a lot of hoping with that kind of stuff. And it's, yeah, I can't think of them now, but I seem to recall in the game thinking, oh, this is a better chance than the indirect kick or that we just missed or whatever like that. We had some chances that we didn't take. It wasn't like that was our only chance.
So let's do this. We're now two games in. We have 1 point after two games. Overall feeling, are you still optimistic? Are you a bit worried? Where do you sit, Josh?
I'm a bit worried. I mean, after two games against two opponents that I don't think were the greatest, despite, you know, the accolades that Red Bulls 2 got last season and how good they did this season, I don't think they look like the same team at all. And the same thing with Cincy. Cincy has splashed a lot of money, but I don't feel like they're there yet, and they're struggling. So I feel like these were two winnable games that we just didn't capitalize on, and that worries me.
Kev, what do you think?
I'm a bit different than Josh. I do think those are two pretty good teams, and I think we helped them to look average. I think a lot of it is also how we're playing. I think we're a better team than we are last year. And I think our goal has to be just making the playoffs, which isn't that hard of a task. And we're by no means out of that conversation yet. I think right now I'm happy with how Brandt is setting them up. I'm happy with how the players are responding. It seems like Corey's hungry for this season, which is always going to help. And, you know, I'm really happy with the Jack and Boss back there. And I think Trey seems to be a good keeper as well. Yeah, I'm still optimistic.
Yeah, I think Kev, I'm sort of in your camp as well. I think, like I said, going into this game and not actually having watched it yet, I was more of like with Josh, like, here we go again. Like, it's this, you know, this is going to be another season just like last year. But I think after seeing the team play, even down at 10 men and doing some of the quick 1-2-3 over the top type passes, there is a clear game plan, a clear system in place. And at times it was still entertaining, even down to 10 men, they were still putting on a show. We want to see that translate into wins, but at the same time, doing this against, let's face it, when we were talking the preseason, we were thinking these were going to be two of the top teams in the league, that the Red Bulls and Cincy were going to be up there as, you know, 1 and 2 in the East. And so, or at least 2 and 3. And so to come out and play them the way that we did, I feel happy about it.
What I do agree with Josh is I think these, although I think they're good teams and I think we've played well against them, at the same time, yeah, they're not, it's not like two juggernauts that collide into each other. I think they've, you know, yeah. What am I trying to say here?
I think you're saying Josh is right. I don't, that's all I heard.
No. I think it's slightly disheartening to not get positive results in these games when the other team isn't exactly at their best. It's not like Cincy came and completely cut us open. I thought Cincy did a really good job being the away team. I thought they had no interest in playing continuous soccer for 3 minutes straight. They were happy with small fouls here, throw-ins there, offsides here, just stopping the game however they can, getting in the refs here and everything like that. They had no interest in playing this kind of free-flowing soccer, which is fine. I mean, it's a tactic. It's a style of play. No problem. But they didn't necessarily come here and cut us open and make us look terrible. So that is... I agree with Josh on that end, where in games where we weren't clearly the worst side, it's kind of disheartening that we don't get 3 points.
But that comes back to my initial question, and we're not going to get into a massive discussion about this, but how much of that is Cincy coming in and trying to impose what they want to do, and how much of that is the Hounds' style of play being an impact on a team like Cincinnati that, against other teams, may be a lot better? And it's just that the way that we were playing and the way we were controlling the ball wasn't allowing them to play their way. And I don't know. I don't think we're going to have an answer to that until we're further into the season and we actually see what some of these other teams can do and we see how the Hounds react to some of those teams. But I think that's why I'm still optimistic, is because in my mind, it's not as clear cut that, like, oh, you know, Cincy just wasn't on their game. This could be the Cincy team that, you know, is going to go off and tear off against other teams, and the Hounds were just able to stifle them.
I think it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. I mean, I think it was, we played well. We didn't hit the heights that we can, and they didn't hit the heights that they can either. I don't know.
So this is the part of the show where we were supposed to have the interview with Ryan Allen from the ECC podcast, but unfortunately that audio, due to technical difficulties, that audio was lost. No. So it was a fantastic discussion. We talked for about 20 minutes all about all the different stats on USL. Ryan did a ton of homework on both the Hounds and the Battery, trying to put together, you know, an idea of what we can expect based on the stats alone. So again, it's a shame that audio was lost. The gist of the conversation was that based on stats, it seems like you know, the Battery have a solid defense, and they get a lot of goals off of their defense as well, whereas Pittsburgh is a much more offensive team, aside from the fact that, you know, we did a fairly decent job shutting down Cincy this week. So this could end up playing out to be a draw. You know, Ryan pointed out especially how the Battery have been solid at home for years and years and years and years and years. And so all of us did our predictions. And everyone, I believe, except for maybe Kevin, predicted either a 0-0 draw or a 1-1 draw. And that's sort of how we see things going. We will absolutely have Ryan on again. It was an amazing conversation. You can go over and follow him on Twitter at @ILM_Ryan. You can hear him on the ECC podcast over at BGN.FM. And he also writes for Indomitable City Soccer. So you can follow him over there. So again, sorry we lost that conversation, but... you'll definitely hear from Ryan at some point in the future. He's too much fun to pass up. So, on with the show. So, yeah, again, a big thanks to Ryan for joining us. A few little housekeeping things here before we wrap up the show. Number one, for those of you who are watching the video feed, which are Kevin and Josh, I am rocking one of the sweet new Mongols hats, which... Honestly, this is like my new favorite thing. Like, this is like a legit, it's really like one of those almost like flat rim hats, and the new Mongols logo is embroidered on the top. They're black hats with the gold logo. If I ever wear a hat anywhere again, it's going to be this hat no matter what. Even if it wasn't for our podcast, it's just, it's really friggin' sweet. So
it's almost too cool for you to wear it.
It really is. Like, I put it on and I'm like, I'm a dad with three kids. Like, I should not be allowed to wear this. This is way too cool. So if you want it, I posted a, I'll put a picture of it in the show notes, but we also posted a picture on Twitter. If you want one, just head over to mongols.com, click on the Become a Supporter button. Anyone who joins at the advocate level will get a hat plus all the other benefits of the supporter tier. So I think we have one advocate right now. We will be sending them out a hat so they have it. It's a great way to support the show, plus get some really, really sweet stuff that people are gonna be like, oh, that's awesome, what is that from? And you can be like, oh, that's Mongols, that's, you know, no big deal. So that's one thing. The second thing that we're not going to dive into too deeply right now, just because there's a lot to come out still about it. But the USL announced that in 2019, I believe, they are going to be launching a third division league. So, you know, obviously the USL moved up to Division 2. NASL is still Division 2. So there is no Division 3 league. And apparently the USL is now looking to create a lower division league. And so this opens up all sorts of conversations about who's going to play in the league. Does this potentially lead to something like pro rel between the leagues? I don't know. I mean, obviously, like we said, there's still a lot to come out. I guess, Josh, you spotted the article and sort of shared it around with everybody first. Your just initial, you know, 2-minute thoughts on this, on where you think this could go and whether or not you think it could be good or bad.
I think it could be good, but at the same time, I don't think it leads us to pro rel, mostly because of the fact that this is a situation that we've seen before. USL used to have USL, I think it was like A and B or 1 and 2. I can't remember what they called them. And back then, it was more of a financial thing where if the team wasn't doing well financially and they, you know, didn't have much money to spend on players, they would go down to the third division. And if they were doing well, they would go up to the second division, just on a purely financial level. What they wanted to spend. So I feel like we're going to see that again with this.
Okay. Kev, did you have any initial thoughts on a D3 USL league?
I mean, I was interested that it kind of came out now. It was more the timing of it. Why the American Soccer Association couldn't figure all of this out when they were figuring out the NASL, USL, you know, tier two kind of stuff and kind of send out a comprehensive thing then. I don't know. But yeah, I at least for me, it's too early to kind of have opinions on from my perspective.
I almost see it as like the USL saw an opening when both them and NSL or NASL were named Division Two, and they were like, oh crap, there's no Division Three. We need to pounce all over that and basically use it to make ourselves like, I don't say the de facto league, but we've talked about this before in terms of the number of teams that are out there that are looking to join the USL. If USL expands its branding, I mean, MLS is always going to be top dog from a monetary standpoint, but in terms of like land area covered, I could see the USL becoming bigger than the MLS in terms of having fans in different locations.
Especially if you keep in mind that if they were to do this, they now have control of the third division. And in all intents and purposes, I know NHL is still out there, but we have more teams in the second division. So they have control of the third, the second. How long before, you know, the rumor, not the rumor, but when some people are speculating, like how long before they kind of decide, you know what, we already have two divisions. Why not try for our first division too? And have USL own all three divisions. If you're MLS and you see this power grab by USL, I wonder what you think and if you feel like, you know, you should be threatened, because they also have fourth division, they have the PDL as well. Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of interesting.
Well, that's what kind of like worries me is like, come on guys, let's get on the same page. Like why is everyone like, this shouldn't be the case. You know, there should be this kind of comprehensive idea of this is what we want American soccer to be like. And this is how we, you know, make better American players and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, it feels weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with Josh. I mean, it would be cool to kind of have it happen. But
yeah. So yeah, I guess more to come on that as news rolls out. But, you know, they said they want to start it in 2019. So I'm sure that you're going to start hearing about, you know, organization. You're going to start hearing about teams. You know, you might hear a team like a Wilmington, you know, Ryan's, I won't say former favorite team because he still follows them. But you may see somebody like a Wilmington make it into a third division, which would be cool. So yeah. So we'll talk about that more. If you guys have anything out there, any news that, you know, strikes you that you'd like us to talk about it, make sure that you forward it over to us. You can follow us on Twitter @Mongols. You can email us @Mongols@BGN.FM. Thanks again to our buddy Ryan for stopping by. Head over to iTunes, subscribe to our show, leave us a review, and if you're looking for more great soccer podcasts, head over to the Beautiful Game Network at bgn.fm. Like we said, you could find Ryan there along with Evan and Brendan on the USL Eastern Conference Confidential show. There we go. Where they talk about all the teams in the Eastern Conference. That show is getting a lot of traction. We were talking to our buddy Matt Cox, who hosts the Unused Subs podcast, which is all about the Rowdies. And he was saying he was down at a tailgate and he overheard people talking about USL ECC, which is those guys' show. So really cool stuff. They're putting together some good stuff, lots of good topics. So go check that out. Otherwise, good luck, fellas, to the trip to Charleston. You know, obviously we're pulling for you. We will be back next weekend with our reactions. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you very, very soon.
Cheers.
Later.
Before you go, please help us to keep doing what we're doing by becoming a supporter of the show. Head over to mongoals.com and click on the Become a Supporter button. For as little as $1 per month, just $1, you can help keep the show commercial free while also getting a say in who we interview, the questions we ask, what we talk about, and you can get some sweet gear as well. Thanks again to all of our listeners for your continued support. That's mongoals.com. Click on Become a Supporter. mongoals.com. Become a supporter. Thanks.